The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on 100.2 FM, 95.1 FM, Freeview 277 and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the Stonkin' course is Jill Sirkin.
Hello.
Hello.
We've had a little email from, it's about the Kent County Council, or councils in Kent. They have slapped drivers, Paul Andrews, with more than £9.5 million pounds worth of parking fines last year.
Got to make money somehow, haven't they?
Figures released by the Department for Levelling Up.
They nip out while you're not looking and paint yellow lines under your car.
Well, they could use the money to fill some of the potholes.
We can live in hope.
Yeah.
Figures released by the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities, I think I'm freezing everybody here, have shown that cash-strapped councils brought in £1.9 billion in parking charges across the UK in 2022-2023 financial year. Just under a third of that, £589.09 million, came from on-street penalty charge notices. I'm trying to keep my homeopathy under my tongue here. Kent councils made fines totaling just over £9.6 million. I was reading today, or listening on the news, that there's a load of unpaid parking charges because people aren't paying them. But, you know, my road on the seafront in Whitstable, they park all over the double yellows, all over the pavement, all over the grass, Tankerton slopes, and they never come. They could make money with people actually doing the wrong thing. But instead, they get poor little shoppers who run 5 minutes over or... gets my goat, does it, you, Ed?
Yeah, it's really bad, yeah.
Because they're killing the high street.
Right, here's a follow-on from what you've just done. New figures show which Kent councils have the highest level of debt.
Oh, yeah.
And number one, guess.
Not Canterbury.
It's Canterbury City Council. They have a debt of £157 million.
Well... that's incredible.
Followed by Ashford Council, who have a debt of £124 million, Gravesham £84 million, Folkestone £67 million, Dover £69, Dartford £32, and Maidstone, who just aren't trying hard enough, and Poultry £5
million. Oh, they're not trying hard enough, definitely.
Tunbridge Wells not there.
Deeply disappointed.
Hold on.
Oh, yeah. Swale, Tunbridge Morning, and Tunbridge Quells have zero debt. Kent County Council has a debt of £787 million.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, some of this stems from the fact that it was Kent County Council who were at the back of one of the big financial freezes, when the financial scandals with the Icelandic banks, because they put a lot of their deposit money with the Icelandic banks, which went pop, and they lost a load of our money, which they've had to borrow back to keep themselves solvent.
£1.2 billion they lost.
Yes. Precipitating a financial crisis into the bargain. Yep. Bless them.
I just was going to sign a petition. It's got to be, you know, they have to look at it first before it goes live. But a petition to ask the councils that they all show how they spend our money.
Yeah,
which I think would be really good. So I think
not on potholes.
Theory, they do that. There's usually sort of a little organogram that shows how they spend the council tax. It's usually on the council tax website.
It's on your council tax bill, but it is at a macro level. Yeah. It's policing £5 million.
Policeman? I haven't seen a policeman for about 15 years.
No, hold on. But basically, they don't say, and we wasted £20 million doing this, and we wasted £5 million, you know, making sure that golf. I've got a curry every Wednesday or whatever.
I've got some gossip, which I think you know about, but maybe Simon and Ed don't. So in Herne Bay, there's a big sports centre, and there's a hot desking area called Neptune, which I think Paul's mentioned a couple of weeks back.
It's gone bust.
And it's run by Canterbury City Council. They set it all up. Above, on the first floor, they've got an estate agent paying rent, another company paying rent, not sure, and... Herne Bay radio station, FM,
Cabin FM,
all paying rent. They have got rid of them all, told them they got to leave, even though they're paying rent. And what they're going to do with the building, all the hot desking is closed down, as Paul said. What are they going to do with the building? Leave it empty. What's their reason? I was told, I don't know what you know, that they can't be bothered to take the money from lots of different people that are hot desking.
It's worse than that.
It's bonkers. It's a sports centre as well.
The sports centre will stay, I think. It's a swimming pool and stuff.
It's worse than that. This was under the... we ought to emphasise this was under the last council.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben Fitzhardin and his mates.
Yeah.
When it closed down on a day. Yeah, the Casey... Canterbury City Council arrived on a day and said to everybody, you've got to leave by the end of the week.
They evicted everyone.
Let me tell you. Yeah. I saw... people started moaning about that, obviously.
Yeah.
I rang Ben.
Yeah.
And I said, don't evict them. I will take it over from you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will take it over. Why are you closing it? We can't afford to run it. I said, hand it over to me. I'll pay you rent directly, and I'll take it over. Oh, would you? That would be lovely. We'll get our man Leo to coordinate.
Leo.
Nothing. Yeah. I rang Leo. I've spoken to Ben. This is what we're going to do. Oh, that would be brilliant, mate. Okay, what do we need to do next? I'll get back to you. Nothing. 3 months later, still nothing. By which time everybody had left and found somewhere else to go.
Yeah, of course. They can't be there. At the moment, it's just Bay Radio there, and they've got to leave.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, where are they going to go? And they're FM, you know.
Well, the guy's Sean, who's the guy, I can't remember his surname. He was on the radio a while back. He does email stuff. Sean Reynolds, who was one of the co-workers there, he went round... in the high street the day they were chucked out and found an empty shop and rented it and fitted it out, and they all moved in there.
That shows initiative. But can you imagine a council saying they can't bother with taking the rent?
Well, it's
like...
it's the same situation that I've got. I'm fed up now, so I don't mind talking about this. I own an office building in Ashford in Church Road, just down the road from the library. It's not a huge place. It's about 3,500 feet. It's originally a semi-detached house. And up my half of the semi was radically extended by the lawyers that used to own it. And we put a financial services business in there, and then we sublet, licensed, in fact, individual rooms to other people. Just a straightforward, not quite hot desking, but the same sort of thing. And people just give me a month's notice if they want to get want to leave. So it's really, really easy in, really easy out. My last tenant, the last tenant that left, had been with me for 10 years, and he retired.
Right.
People stay. I thought, when I bought the building, if I make money out of this, it'd be marvellous, but all I'm looking to do is pay the cost of the mortgage, which I've since paid off. Mm. In fact, we were nearly 100% occupied from day one. I mean, it was just nothing short of miraculous. Mm. But then the other half of the building had been empty for at least 10 and possibly as long as 15 years when I bought the other half 10 years ago.
Wow.
So it had been empty for at least 10, possibly 15 years.
It's rotting.
Then
just sitting there
rotting. Literally rotting, and owned by KCC.
Oh.
5 years ago or thereabouts, KCC sold the building to Ashford Borough Council, and they'd been messing about with planning permission to try and put some flats up on that part of the site and use that as access, and another building that they'd let go over years and years and years. I could have given them £150,000-£200,000 for that building 10 years ago. It would have been liable for business rates, which they would have been receiving for 10 years. And instead of having an eyesore and a dilapidating asset for which they are responsible, being a productive part of the business community in the town, they've just left it there. It's an absolute blooming eyesore. And I'm so angry. It's just... Yeah.
Well, it is awful. And when you think also, there are homeless people that could have lived there for however many years, aside from that.
Yeah.
It now needs a complete new roof. Apart from anything else, water's got in, the roof has rotted. I think it needs complete new roof timbers, or certainly a major section of it.
I mean, and now they'll say it's too expensive, they can't do it.
Well, effectively, they're looking to try and sell it for housing. That's what they want to try and do. So a semi-detached building on the side of an office building in a business district... They're trying to actually turn into residential. It's just daft.
We could do a whole month of shows on the stupidity and ineffectiveness of local government. I was talking to someone yesterday about Rosemary Lane car park in Canterbury, next to our place in Fruitworks. It was a council pound display car park. According to Canterbury,
they closed it down, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, according to Canterbury City Council, they only make money out of car parking, which is why the car parking charges are so high. They shut the car park. It's a 100-car car park. They shut the car park 3 years ago and put it up for sale. And I said to Ben, who was the leader of the council,
to build on it.
Yeah. Well, I said, you haven't sold it, right? Why? Well, there's no planning permission. You're the council. Yeah. But, you know, an architect's got to apply.
Why not take it out of service once you've actually got it sold? There's nothing to stop you keeping it inactive until the day it completes.
Well, I said, so why can't I park my car there, yeah, until you've sold it to someone to put flats on? Oh, well, the overhead of collecting the money. It's an ANPR camera.
There was a machine and a camera.
By app, probably.
Yeah.
You could have made money out of parking fines, you muppets.
I know.
I worked out that they had turned down £325,000 a year for a piece of tarmac, because that's what they would have earned on car parking if it had been open.
The management is just terrified.
But then doesn't it go right up to, we try and avoid politics, but right up to the government? Look how our money was wasted, and, you know, just unbelievable, wasn't it? It's sickening, because we all knew that we would all be paying now for it, which is what's happening.
The waste in every level of government is eye-watering. I don't know what the answer to that is, because nobody seems to want to attack it. Anyway, we could rant about that forever.
There's another show, isn't it?
And we can't do that, because we've got Simon back here. And we've got Simon back here because Simon was on last week, and we did this to him last week. We asked Simon to come and talk about something, and then we all started a rant about something else, and we ran out of time.
We did, but it was a very good rant.
It was.
We love a good rant.
This
here.
Is the home of ranting.
Ranting, with, absolutely.
Without any shadow of a doubt.
There's so many people to rant at these days.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you have to get it off your chest, don't you? Otherwise, you just boil.
Where else can you go?
Yeah,
I mean,
you
this
would
is a
boil.
Great place to rant.
No, but
Channel
I would rather
home of the rant.
I would rather go to Ed's and have some Lebanese food and a nice bottle of Lebanese wine.
And then
frankly,
you just sort of what's the word? Relax and just all your ranting would disappear.
Yeah.
Well, I've just had a message from someone over in Sinkport saying you do realise you've got 40 million listeners now. It's going well.
40 million listeners, because we're ranting?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's on our side.
Everybody's tuning in and going, listen to this lot.
Yeah,
do you know what? Our council are going to just...
Don't start another one.
I've got to get it off my chest. They're going to start rummaging through our bins to make sure that we're recycling properly now. Yeah. And then if we don't, they're going to put a tag of shame, a plastic tag of shame.
Have they just started that?
No, they've done it before, but they're doing it again.
I had that years ago.
I have an alter ego, which is Custard Bird on Twitter, and you have to Google custard shortage in Whitstable. And Custard Bird said, are they recycled plastic tags? Because,
Have you heard about public toilets being closed as well?
Oh, yeah. tell me. Forward to your mic.
Certainly in East Sussex, definitely, there's apparently a trial of shutting public toilets.
How does that work?
Yeah, how do you test whether the trial works? Yeah, everyone. Yeah,
but also, what do they do? Pop behind a bush?
No
or?
Idea. But it's causing a lot of angst over the border.
Well, a lot of cross legs.
During lockdown, when everybody was walking, they closed all the toilets.
Apparently, according to the technical guy over in the radio, 40 million is a bit of an exaggeration.
Never mind. But it was a nice dream for
for a little while. Yeah.
Well, you know, as I'm talking about tax year-end planning, I would expect the audience numbers to go up, because everybody finds it such a deeply fascinating and engaging subject.
Absolutely. So look, Simon Webster, the Money Talk guru, the man from Talis IFA, is back. We've invited him back for the second week because we didn't finish what we were doing last week, and we did get a lot of feedback from people saying that was really interesting. Can we hear the rest of it,
but
please?
Simon, can I just interrupt just quickly?
Well, you do. Yeah.
You can't interrupt me. I haven't said anything yet.
How many shows are we going to do before you stop interrupting him?
I did say to Ed, as we minced to the toilet together, arm in arm, that, you know, he can also chip in on this half, because you chip in on that, and that's how we roll. We have a little FM listener who it's her birthday. I had to check it wasn't your Amanda, but we have an Amanda listening on FM, and we would love to say happy birthday, Amanda.
Happy birthday, Amanda.
There you go. Happy birthday, Amanda.
Have you filed the tax return yet, Amanda?
No, it's her birthday. She's eating cake.
That's good.
Right, listen. Stop interrupting, George.
No, I won't now.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to welcome Simon Webster back onto the Business Bunker Show. And Simon was with us last week, and we were starting to talk about tax returns. It's that time of year. There's only a few days left to get your self-assessment in and stuff like that. So where are we, Simon? What should we be looking at? What have we got to look out for? And what things can we do to help minimise how much we spend in these things?
Well, there are two dates that we need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. The first and most imminent date, the one that's pressing, is the 31st of January,
yep.
by which time you must have submitted your tax return for the tax year that runs from the 6th of April 2022 to the 5th of April 2023, i.e. the last tax year. You have until the 31st of January this tax year.
See, they
to get
do
that
this
return.
Deliberately, though, don't they?
Just to confuse people.
Just to confuse people. Yeah. They move the dates so that...
No, the date's always been that way.
Yes, I know, but it doesn't line up. Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense to anybody else, but that's the way it is, and you just have to live with it. So that's the first thing. You've got to get your tax return in, and you've got to pay any tax owed on or before the 31st of January. And if you haven't done it, you'll face a fine and possibly penalties. And it's very blooming expensive. So seriously, 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 if you have not yet done that, then you should. Now, if you've not got round to registering for filing your self-assessment tax return online, you probably have a problem, because normally there's a week to 10-day engagement period before your account is fully set up and running, and you are probably now stuffed. That's a technical expression. But if you did it today, you might get away with it, but you'd be very, very lucky.
Right.
But that's a crucial one to bear in mind, and you've got to get that done. And if you were well behaved and filed your tax return in the previous couple of months, but you were blown, if you were going to give them the money early, don't forget you've got to have given HMRC cleared funds by the 31st of January. Otherwise, the same fines and penalties apply.
Can I ask a question?
You most certainly can, Mr. Andrews, sir.
Are all tax returns online now, or can you still submit them by paper?
You can still submit a paper return, but the deadline for that was the 30th of September.
Ah, right.
So you get longer because it's online, because obviously you're doing all the work for them.
Right.
The nice thing about an online return, the very nice thing for me, is I'm married to a lady. 40
a lady?
Years, a lady, 40 years next month. But she has a keen eye for detail, and she's good at this stuff.
Mm.
And she actually produces a spreadsheet that's got our income and our expenditure and all the complicated bits in between, and it's all in the spreadsheet. And I literally turned my computer on last Sunday. I sat in front of it for no more than 15 minutes, and I typed in the numbers from the spreadsheet. I pushed submit, and my tax return was submitted.
He's taunting us now,
isn't
he?
She's a keeper.
Yeah.
What's your wife's name?
Pam.
Pam, you are a keeper. You're amazing. That is a spreadsheet.
Pam, come and live with me. Don't live with him. Come and live with me.
A spreadsheet. I mean, I love
Who doesn't love a spreadsheet?
Well, I don't like doing them, but I love to have one.
No, well, so that's the first deadline date, and if you haven't done it, you've got a problem, so get it sorted out. You may be able to find an accountant who's got the capacity and access to HMRC's online to submit a return for you right up until the deadline, if they've got spare room.
Right.
But most of them are absolutely fully flat out. You talk to most small practice accountants at the moment, you know, this is their busiest fortnight in the year, just doing the tax returns.
I wonder why it couldn't be flexible. Why, you know, it couldn't be the year you start your business. Why does it all have to be at the same time?
Everybody's exhausted. Bear in mind, you've had since you're allowed to file your tax return any time from the 6th of April 2023 until the 31st of January 2024. So you've got a eight months? I can't do that.
I did mine.
So you've got a huge window in which
that's
to do
it.
The only people who've got a problem are the people who left it to the last minute and were insufficiently organised.
Mm.
But you just got to get it done. It is the law. And we may not like HMRC very much. We may not like paying tax very much. But if we want the potholes fixed and the NHS to work, then we've probably got to give the poor people some money.
I did mine in October, November.
Oh,
but
Swatty, isn't he?
When I said I did mine, my accountant did mine.
Yeah.
Mind
you, it didn't take long to enter 50p, though, did it, Paul?
I tell you what, Simon, that is absolutely true. I've got nothing. There's no figures on this, Paul. That's because I didn't earn anything. To answer your question, though, Jules, about when you started a business, these are personal tax returns.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, that gets confused with sole traders because sole traders are just taxed as personal taxation.
Mm.
Yeah. It's one self-assessment, whether you're a sole trader or an individual.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, sole trader is an individual.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same thing.
Yeah. But so, if you're a business, you don't do your, a business doesn't do its tax returns like that.
No.
No, they're done on your financial year.
Well, effectively, you have to pay your corporation tax, which is what a limited company pays, based on the financial year ended in the tax year, and then you pay your corporation tax. You've normally got nine months until the end of your financial year to pay your corporation tax based on the profits of the previous year, which gives you a chance to count the beans, make any adjustments that may be deemed appropriate by your accountant, and then work out what the bill is and then pay it over.
Unless you're an oil company.
Unless you're an oil company, because they do something else, do they?
Yeah. If you're an oil company, you don't get 9 months to pay your tax. You have to pay it in three tranches, 3 months, 6 months and 9 months.
And by the way, the price of oil is now down to $80 a barrel or something.
And gas is even further down.
And oil was a barrel. It was $100 in 2022, $100. Why are our energy bills still high? It's annoying me. Yeah.
Well, the answer is, if you're on a pay-as-you-go tariff that's reflecting the current prices, then your price will be low. But because a lot of people fix their tariffs 6 months, 12 months, 18 months ago, or whatever they're on, they're still paying that higher fixed price. But as your tariff comes up for renewal, the spot rate now is give or take what it was at the start of 2021.
And they had
confirmed as I walked in the door.
Well, what about the standing charges?
That's a different thing. But the other problem with that is that a lot of the suppliers will go, yes, but we bought gas and oil at X price, so we're going to continue charging you that until we've sold it all, and then we'll buy it at the lower price. Mm. But anyway, I want to come back to Simon.
Thank you, Paul.
We're running out of time again, and we still haven't covered all the things that we want to cover with Simon. So, well,
and I really appreciate you remembering that this week, Mr. Andrews is very kind of you. Yeah. So we start. I mean, this is the more, what's the word? Probably the more important point, and you've got a little bit of time to get organised. We're in the middle of January. You've got the whole of February and the whole of March to do your tax year end planning for the tax year 23-24, which ends on the 5th of April 2024.
Yeah.
And I know I said this last week, but I make no apology because it's so important. There are some absolutely basic housekeeping hygiene things that you can do towards minimising your tax bill now and in the future.
Yep.
And financial advisors are always saying this, and people are sick and tired of hearing us say it. I'm sorry, but it's important. Mm. First off, ISAs. The government gives you this little bucket that you can put money into, and there is no tax on the interest, there is no tax on the dividends, and if you use stocks and shares, ISA dividends, there's no tax on capital gains. Now, that is a huge advantage. If you're a married couple, or if you're just a couple, you can check 20 grand into ISA each. Now, there's a lot of people that are going to be listening saying, I'd like to have 5 grand, never mind 40 grand. But if you're lucky enough to have 40 grand lying around in savings or something, and it's not in an ISA, with respect, dear listener, you're an idiot, because you can buy an ISA for free. They're free wrappers, and you can stick the money in and you can get a return, and it is all tax free. And it has never been more important than it is today to think about buying an ISA, because the other thing that people have slightly forgotten about, because so few people used to pay capital gains tax, but an increasing number of us are, because back in the day you could make £12,500 capital gains on assets or investments before you paid any tax at all. Now it's 3,000 quid. So let's give you an example. If you're lucky enough to have £100,000 in savings in just a sort of standard collective or an investment account with some insurance company or on a platform somewhere, if you make 10% on capital gain on that investment, then you've made a £10,000 capital gain. 2 years ago, that gain, all of that gain, would have been completely tax-free. Today, £3,000 of that gain is tax-free. The rest of it is taxed, and it's taxed a lot.
Is it 20%?
So it's taxed, and it hurts. And of course, you've got higher rate tax liability. You're lucky enough to be earning some income as well. You pay higher rate tax on top.
Yeah.
So it's still taxed a lot. Mm. And the key point really is to make sure that you minimize your tax exposure, unless you're into the business of giving the government more of your money for them to squander on stupid things. So really, really, really taking money from a standard collective investment account or a unit trust, as some people still talk to them, and putting that into a stocks and shares ISA will ensure that your capital gains are tax free, your dividends are tax free, and your interest is tax free. And if you can effectively get a return equivalent to 25% extra just from moving money from one trouser pocket to another trouser pocket, you'd be daft not to do it. But so many people never get round to it, or don't think about it, or didn't know about it. So now's your chance. So that's your first thing.
Can I just ask a question about ISAs and stuff like that? What's the kind of return on an ISA at the moment? We're saying tax-free, but it's the return that's tax-free.
Yes, it is the return that's tax-free. Well, I mean, effectively, there's about five different types of ISA, but I always think about them as two, and then there's the specialist ones for people who've got very interest. One is a cash ISA.
Yeah.
So you cash deposit, you give the money to a bank or building society, and they lend it to other people at a premium, and they give you a rate of interest in exchange. Capital is usually 100% secure, and you're in a situation where you're just going to get that interest. And normally, you could get a one-year rate or maybe a two-year rate with some lenders, deposit takers, and they will take maybe 5%, 4.5% at the moment, 4.5% today's rate. The only issue is, in a year or so's time, as interest rates continue to fall, depending on how you look at it, you're going to be getting 2.5-3% on that cash. And over a longer period, you're likely to see your cash returns be lower than the rate of inflation. And if you're investing for more than 2 or 3 years, or putting money away for more than 2 or 3 years, you ought to consider the alternative, which is an investment ISA, or some people call them a stocks and shares ISA. And there you would be buying into managed funds is probably the best way of describing it.
Yep.
So a fund manager would put together some stocks and shares, some government bonds, and some corporate bonds, and they would give you a balanced portfolio. Now, the value of those things can go down as well as up, and that's the crucial bit. But nevertheless, over a period of time, you would expect to get what some refer to in the trade as a risk premium. So you'd expect to get a return greater than that which is available from cash. And for planning purposes, we're telling people to expect over 5 years that they should get 5% net of charges from those investment stocks and shares ISA.
Which is tax-free.
Yep. Now, there is no guarantee that those returns will be achieved. Yep. The return could be higher or lower than that. Yep. But the key point is, if you don't need the money on a particular day, then all you usually have to do, if things are on a downturn at the time you're starting to think about taking your money, is to wait 6 months until things start to pick up again, and then you can have take your money out at that point.
Yeah,
it's when your need for cash is time sensitive, that's the time you consider cash deposits. When you're taking a longer term view, then you can afford to invest, because over the longer term, over just about every 5 year period that I can think of in living memory, and over every 10 year period, I think bar one in living memory, investments have outperformed cash deposits on a like for like basis over all these time periods. So it's almost a no brainer.
Right.
Okay. So that's ISAs is the first thing. It's really boring, but you know, it's a use it or lose it opportunity.
Okay.
Next one that pension financial advisor, you always say this, Simon, is pensions. Mm. Now, I had a chat with a chap literally last night. Came in, he was a friend of my son-in-law's, and he came in, he said, I'm approaching retirement, I've got these pensions, I don't know what I can do with them. And he had, let's call it £100,000. It was slightly more than that, but it was give or take £100,000. Now, if you've got £100,000 invested and you're getting a 5% return from that £100,000...
In the pension, do you mean?
So £100,000 in that pension investment.
Right, okay, yeah.
You've got £100,000 in that pension, thank you. Then you could expect to invest that and get about a 5% return. Now, you could get slightly more, you could get slightly less, but let's pretend it's 5%. That's £5,000 a year.
Yeah.
Now, the state pension from April, give or take, £11,000.
Yeah.
So that pension income plus the state pension means he's going to have a pension income of £16,000 a year. Mm. Chap I spoke to last night, make it over 30. So overnight, his income is going to halve.
Yeah.
And that is the problem that lots and lots and lots of people face today. They're going, well, hang on, I want to have a decent lifestyle when I retire. I'm going to have more time. I'm going to play more golf. I want to go on more holidays. Oh, poo, I haven't got any cash. And the reality is, if you have £500,000 in pension, which sounds like a fortune, and it is a reasonable sum, let's face it, 5%, that's still only £25,000 a year. So if the guy had £500,000 pension fund and his state pension, he'd broadly speaking have an income in retirement equal to what he was earning before he retired.
You see, I plan to die early.
Looking at the state of your pool, yeah. I think you're probably on target. But that's the question, because none of us know how long we've got.
Yeah. So is there a way around that, is it?
Sorry, second?
What advice did you give him for that?
Well, I suggested that he put more money into pension.
Yeah.
I suggested that maybe he couldn't afford to retire as early as he wanted. Now, this particular individual situation was a little bit more complicated than that, but that was the starting point.
Okay.
If you were somebody in that situation and you had no other resources, you'd have to start thinking, well, really, what I need to do is probably start putting 10 grand... I mean, this guy was putting in under £100 a month into his pension. Now, at the end of the day, you've got to be thinking about putting 10 grand a year into pension.
Yeah.
Because the net, your net income after pension costs is still going to be higher when you're working than it is going to be when you retire.
Mm.
But at least you're going some way towards balancing the huge drop from when you are working and you're on this nice 30 grand a year or whatever it is plus, and you suddenly drop to 16.
Mm.
You've plugged the gap. And instead of retiring tomorrow, which we'd all like to do in some ways, as it happens, I'm working because I want to, but that's a different conversation. Most people want to retire. And if you want to retire early, the only difference between a retired gentleman and an old age pensioner is how much cash they got in their pocket.
Yeah.
And you're a retired gentleman if you're loaded, and you're an old age pensioner if you have to stand at the bus stop because you can't afford to run a car.
Yeah.
And there's millions, millions
got a bus
of people
pass.
In that situation. Yeah, I'm not entitled to one yet, Paul, because I'm too young. Oh, no, actually, I think you get a bus pass at 65, don't you?
Yeah.
I think I've got to apply for one, right? Because
I have to apply for it now.
I turn 65 in November.
Guess what? He's a mere baby, isn't he?
Yeah, when I turned 65, my family kindly applied for it for me so that they could present it to me.
How very kind of them.
I often wonder about people that pay rent, you know, what happens when you stop working and you still got to find... rent.
Housing benefit.
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough to be able to get it. But I mean, this is the real
issue. So when people retire, they go on housing benefit?
Yeah, they start applying for benefits to cover the cost of living. It's the only way they can make it. I mean, you know, it's universal credit, blah, blah, blah. There's all sorts of... It's not an area in which I am very expert, but effectively, if your income is below a certain level in retirement, then you will
you
get some state
benefits,
support.
Because there's a lot of pensioners, like my mother, who's 93, who's got a beautiful house, but her pension since my dad died has halved.
Yeah.
She's still paying tax. She says it's going down and down. I'm paying tax on my pension, da 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 da. And the cost of everything has gone up. She's just spent £3,500 on a hearing aid because the NHS one didn't work. She's about to spend £3,000 on dentures and implants because she needs to eat.
Yeah.
Soup. I need to...
Well, that leads me very neatly into a sort of retirement segue. Well, we financial advisors are always looking for ways to help people. But the truth is there are lots and lots of people who are property rich and cash poor.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got a house, they live in it, and that's great. They don't have to pay rent. But they've still got to maintain it.
Yeah.
They've still got to pay council tax at £200 or £300 a month before you start.
And especially one person living on their own.
And then decorate it. And then all the other stuff that goes with that. And there isn't enough income to do it. So I'm afraid the answer for a lot of people increasingly now is equity release. Now, equity release got a very bad name in the 80s, and rightly so, because it was the Wild West. The market wasn't regulated. We can blame the government for the absence of regulation. But it is... Everything to do with financial services now is so tightly regulated, and the payouts that people have to make if they get things wrong are so huge that people like me spend half our lives looking over our shoulder to make sure we don't screw up, because it's going to cost us a fortune. So people are only allowed to borrow, give or take, at 65, 25% of the value of the house. You've got £400,000 house, you can borrow £100,000. Today you get an interest rate of around 6%, as low as 5.75, as high as 7 from some lenders. The rate's fixed at outset, so you've got no worries about it suddenly the interest rate being doubled or trebled or whatever. Equally, you've got no chance of it going down when rates fall in the next 2 or 3 years, so there's a bit of a trade-off there, but as long as you know that you're okay. But if you do the numbers of £100,000 compounding at 6% next to a house that you hope is going to keep going up at 2 or 3% in value over 25 years, you should find you've still got the same amount of equity in the house in 25 years as you started with.
Yeah.
So you are depriving your children of inheritance, which is what people are so worried about. Mm. And yet when you talk to the kids, you know, and I've had loads of conversations with the kids of parents who've been looking at entry release. Mum and Dad, you know, you've worked hard. It's your money. Have a life. Don't worry about us.
We'll take
care of ourselves. Yeah. Get your dentures. Look after your hearing aid. Do all this stuff. And if there's any left for me at the end, then that's great. But I'd much rather you spent it and had a life.
Yeah.
So equity release, actually, to deal with retirement income shortfall is a huge, huge, huge opportunity. But do make sure you take independent financial advice before you jump. And if you Google talisifa.com, you'll find a friendly equity release expert. It might even be me. They're available on the end of the phone
to
help you. So he slips that in because anybody would think I'd done this before.
Yeah.
So there is just a massive, massive, massive opportunity in that space, because people are asset rich and cash poor. Mm. And that is a very sensible, very reasonable solution. And it is now so highly regulated that all the fears and concerns that people had about that are gone. And any sort of, I'm trying to think of a word. You know, it's no longer a bad thing to do. There was a time when it was a bad thing to do, and it was just not great.
It was something that people said, you don't want to do that. Yeah. It's a rip-off. It's a scam.
Yeah. Well, now you've got really, I mean, you know.
A bit like timeshare.
The last couple of schemes we've done with Standard Life. Now, it's a household name in insurance. I mean, somebody in financial service, I could talk about their brand and what they've done with that, which is not a great story, but that's a name everybody knows and trusts.
Yeah.
LV are in that market, another massive insurance company. So there are some really, really big household names. L&G, Aviva, they're in the market. But of course, the whole point of an independent financial advisor is we research the whole market to find who's offering the best deal on the day you want to get the money and get it arranged. Okay. And make sure you get one that's suitable. Because you don't have to take a huge lump sum. You could take something that's maybe 25, 30 grand and arrange a facility that you can drop into later. Mm. Some of them will pay you 10 grand a year. So you can do lots of different profiles depending on your needs.
Okay. We've got 15 minutes left, and I want to make sure we get everything in.
Right.
Yeah, because there's...
Let's talk about something else, Simon.
Yeah, yeah. No, not at all. I just want to qualify a couple of things.
Okay.
We started talking about pensions and paying into your pension pot.
Yeah.
Let's just come back to that a minute.
Okay.
Because there are some benefits that you need to think about in terms of paying money into your pension pot, especially if you're self-employed or you run your own business, yeah?
Absolutely. Well, nice cue from you, Mr. Andrews. Thank you very much. You did a great assist there. So, I mean, pensions are a phenomenal investment, apart from the fact that you need the money to live on when you retire. Mm. And there's an argument for even if you don't, and I'll come on to that in a second. You get tax relief at the highest rate you pay tax on any money you put into a pension. If you're a basic rate taxpayer, to get 10 grand in your pension, you write a cheque for £8,000. And that works whether it's £100 and 80, £1,000 and 800, £10,000, or even £100,000. And you'd be hard-pressed to do £100,000 in a pension, but there are circumstances when you can. So that's the key point. Tax relief at the highest rate you pay on the way in. And then you get gross roll-up, which means there's next to no tax on a pension fund. I mean, a lot of people own commercial buildings in their pensions. Why? Because there's no capital gains tax on the value of the building as it increases, hopefully, over time. It's where my office building sits in my pension scheme. Mm. And it's a very sensible thing to do. Proof of the pudding's in the eating. I recommend it to other people. I did it myself. And any rental income, tax-free. Any dividends from an investment, tax-free. Any growth on the value of assets that you sell to the pension,
commercial only.
Tax-free.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't buy residential property in SIPs. That's a big no-no. Gordon Brown did float it briefly about 30 years ago, had the whole SIP industry in absolute uproar and excitement, and then he finally listened to HMRC's advice, which was, this is a really, really bad idea because you're going to cause the prices of houses to double overnight.
Right, okay.
And he pulled back on it at the last minute, but he was right to do so.
Yeah, because... I was one of those people that actually managed to do it before they changed the rules. I had a property in a SIP.
A residential property,
yeah.
You're the only person I've ever met who'd done that.
Really, yeah. We had a residential property, and when they changed the rules, we were forced to sell it to get it off the books. Yeah.
So your SIP manager slightly jumped the gun, because my understanding is the regulations never actually allowed it. They were proposed, but never happened. So it's an interesting one. I haven't looked that up. It's curious. Mm. So... as a private individual, you can put up to £40,000 or 100% of your salary into pension. So if somebody gives you a big payout, you get an inheritance, or you're sitting on some cash, one of the things that you can consider, because of the tax relief on the way in, is actually washing that money through a pension, because you get tax relief on the way in, you get gross roll-up as the money's staying in the pension plan, and then you can take a quarter of the fund completely tax-free once you've turned the age of 55, and if you're doing it and you're in your 50s now, it might be 57, because they're putting it up in a couple of years' time to 57 before you can get the money. If you're over 15, if you're over 55 now, you're laughing. But effectively, you get the money out relatively early, and you don't have to start drawing an income at that point. You can just defer taking the income and take the tax-free cash. But here's the really interesting bit. If you're one of the 5 or 10% of people possibly listening to this show that actually has some cash savings and some investments and a pension fund, then you are quite likely to be one of those unfortunate people that's going to have to pay the marvellous inheritance tax, which is going to be the next big political football in the election. Because effectively, people get very cross about paying tax on money they've paid tax to get in the first place. Yeah, and then they have to pay tax when they die. Yeah. And people say it's grossly unfair. Now, I'm not going to get into that, because that's a great theoretical debate, and I'd have to declare an interest, because if I die, there's quite a big inheritance tax bill that my kids are going to have to deal with. Although we've done some stuff to mitigate. So we're not completely stupid.
Yeah.
But the point is, your cash assets are subject to tax. So if you've got let's pretend you've got £1 million house. That's a big number. You're a married couple, you've got £1 million house, then that's totally free of inheritance tax. You can pass that to your children completely free of tax. If you've then got £1 million in investments, and I'm using big numbers to make a big point, then on your death, with that £1 million house and that £1 million of investments, is a £400,000 tax bill.
Wow.
If, on the other hand, you've got £1 million house and you've still got £1 million in your pension fund, there is a zero inheritance tax bill. And this is the bit that people just can't get their brains around. Because it used to be, when we were coming up, Paul, it was put all your money into a pension, you get to 65, somebody's writing this down. This is new information for so many people. So when we were growing up, the idea was you paid into a pension, you got to your 25, 30 years with the company, you got to 65, they gave you a gold watch and a bottle of scotch, and you went home and you lived off your pension, and your savings were your emergency money.
Yeah.
Well, now, George Osborne in 2015 completely turned things on their head. And he effectively set the arrangements up that you were better off spending your savings, on which there would be a 40% inheritance tax bill when you die, and keeping your pension, which you could pass to your children totally free of tax on your death. Now, there's a few wrinkles around that, but the standard planning now, anybody comes to take a withdrawal out of investment from Talis IFA, we actually write to them and say, it may surprise you to know this, but we tell all our clients, take money out of your investments, not out of your pensions initially. Obviously, you want to have £30,000, £40,000, £50,000 cash if you're in that market and you're lucky enough to have that sort of spare money lying around the place. You know, this is planning for more comfortably off people. Sorry, guys. But if you're in a position to leave that money lying around, then leave the pension till last, because that way you're getting a 40p in the pound discount for every pound you spend. I mean, that's the magic of it. You know, spend your money in your lifetime, because the government's going to be spending 40% of it for you.
Yeah. He says this every time I ring him up. I go, can I have money? No. Leave it.
No.
Go away. Stop bothering me.
Leave me with my commission. You can't have any money. Oh, we don't get commission on investment products anymore. I can't say that. Those were the days.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, we actually, you know, people want their money. We always say yes. Like, just to be clear. But the point is, it's a case of trying to be smart about where you take it from.
Yep.
And your sort of training and upbringing would make you think, take your money out of your pension.
Yeah.
But actually, if you're lucky enough to have the choice, and the vast majority of people don't, but if you're lucky enough to be in that rare stratospheric high atmosphere where you do have the choice, take the money out of your other investments first. Now, clearly, if inheritance tax is not an issue for you, it don't matter where you take the money from.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you've got the choice, that's the way to do it. Last point.
Yep.
What, have I got time for one more?
Yeah, go for it.
So clearly, we battled about in ISAs, we rattled on about pensions. There are some clever tax planning stuff you can do. EIS, VCT, EIS is very interesting, capital gains tax, income tax relief, VCT gives income tax relief. You can do this, but you have to be fairly wealthy and reasonably sophisticated to play in that arena. But here's the point. most people come and see a financial advisor when they've got some money. First time in their life, somebody gives them a cheque for £100,000 or £50,000. I say, oh, I've never had that sort of money before. I better go and see a financial advisor. And if I had a pound for the number of people who have sat in my office and said, Simon, I've got this £100,000. What should I do with it? I'd be a millionaire. But and my answer is always the same. Wrong question. And people sort of look blank. You're a financial advisor. I said, yeah, but what do you need this money to achieve for you?
Yeah.
And people say, well, I hadn't really thought about it. And I said, well, this is my job as your financial advisor, is to help help you think about what you want, stroke, need that money to achieve for you.
Yeah.
And when do you need that to happen? So the key point really is the tax year end is a fixed point in time. It imposes this artificial deadline that causes people to think, I must do something with my money now. So while you're there, a bit like when you get old and you start bending over and you have a look around to see what else you can do while you're down there, while you're thinking in that sort of planning area, how do I deal with my tax year end planning? You sort of say, well, what is my plan? What do I need to achieve over the next 5 years for my money? When am I thinking about retiring? When am I going to be spending this money I'm putting in an ISA? Am I going to be moving anytime soon? Have I got enough life insurance? You know, have I got, what happens if I can't work because I'm unable to work through sickness? Have I got enough health insurance? Have I got enough critical illness insurance? And it, just have a general conversation. And so this is the time we get lots of people wandering into the office at this time of the year, sort of saying, well, I've got all this stuff. I'm not sure what to do. Well, let's work out a plan. So it's not just about the tax year end. It's a useful deadline. And there are some very basic things that we all need to do to make sure you get them organized. But actually have a plan, and that way you can really be organized and take the most advantage you possibly can from support from the government.
And that's really good for mental health, isn't it? Knowing that you've sorted it in a way, rather than worrying about it and where should I be investing this, that and the other.
It is, but one of the staggering things, there are so many human beings, we don't like to plan anything. We don't like to think about the basics of what we're doing. I'll give you an example based similarly on what you were just saying, Simon, but slightly off the wall. Many years ago, I had a member of staff that won the jackpot on the lottery.
Oh.
Okay. They won £5 million. And they were reasonably well paid. This was a long time ago, and they were on about £30,000 a year then, which was a reasonable salary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not a bad one now.
Yeah. And she said, right, I'm going to quit. I went, No, don't quit. Think about what you're going to do with the money first. Oh, I've already bought two new cars. We bought a house. Whoa. You're 35 years of age, yeah? To live on £5 million, you might do it just about for the rest of your life, but you need to think about where you're going to invest it. Mm-hmm. And where you're going to invest it is not in cars, yeah? And you know, they went off thinking that £5 million was unlimited amount of funds. And both of them, a husband as well, they both quit their job. He was well paid as well. They quit their job. They bought £1 million house. They bought a Ferrari and a Range Rover and stuff like that. Put the kids into private school and then went bust.
Yeah, it's gone.
And you see that time and time and time again. Another little anecdote. I mean, I had a guy in on this with his relatively small pension. I had another guy who's just done a big property deal and come in to several million quid.
Right.
Lovely position to be in, waited a long time for it, worked really hard to make it happen. So good, hats off to him. It took him 10 years to get the planning permission, bloody, 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 blah. He's got this big lump of cash. And he said, so all I really need is 120,000 a year to live on. Now, we've already done the sums. You've got £500,000. That'll give you 50,000 a year at 5%. So you need £1 million to give you 100,000 a year. You need £1.5 million to give you 100. And you start thinking about it. You say you need an awful lot of money invested to produce what is not, you know, I mean, £120,000, there'll be people listening saying, hey, you know, that's a fortune. I'd kill to be on that sort of money. And who could blame you? But if you've got that sort of money in the bank, you kind of expect, oh, I could spend £500,000 a year. But if you start with £5 million, that's all your money's gone in 11 years.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years plus a bit of interest. It's all gone in 11 years.
Yeah.
Now, if you're 50 when that happens, you're broke at 61.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what happened to your jackpot
winner. Yeah, exactly.
So you
need
a plan. Yeah. You need some goals. You need some objectives. Mm. And you need a little bit of fiscal discipline.
Yeah.
Financial discipline. Monetary discipline. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great believer in discipline. Mm-hmm. Jules is a strict disciplinarian. I understand from her website.
with my hockey stick.
Oh, you said it. Yeah.
Miss Hockey Stick disciplinarian, yeah. Absolutely.
The cupboard monitor.
Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah, go on.
Martin Reeves, we had a tweet because he's listening live, and he says, amazing listening. He said, we had to sell my mum's house, which is now paying for her nursing home fees. I think Boris Johnson was going to change this, but I doubt the government ever will. And that's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrible, yeah.
One of the biggest problems in the Western world is the political cycle. Because political parties are typically in power for 4 or 5 or 6 years. 5 years in the UK.
Yeah.
And actually, you can't do a lot in 5 years. You need 10 or 15 years to really do something. And the prime example of this is Japan after the Second World War. I can't remember the name of it, but they had a long-term economic plan for growth for Japan.
Marshall Law.
Marshall Plan helped, but there was the Japanese had their own specific plan, and they organized themselves, and that is why, you know, in the 80s and 90s, Japan was just going absolutely topsy. Their economy was brilliant. Now, unfortunately, it became a victim of its own success, and it got a little bit lazy and a little bit fat, and they've had all sorts of problems since. Yeah. But that was the fruition of years and years and years of consistently doing the same thing well and looking for steady returns over a long term. And having a plan.
Same as the Norwegian Sovereign Fund.
Exactly that. Well, if only we'd done that instead of squandering the money on short-term fixes. You know, all our potholes and our NHS could be funded by a sovereign fund and we'd never have to worry again. Yeah. And we've missed that boat. And it's a tragic, tragic missed opportunity by politicians on both sides of the aisle.
Guess what?
We've run out of time again.
Should we get him on again next week? Because, it's so important.
Well, do you know what I've talked him into doing?
What?
I've talked him into... Well, he used to do his own show.
Yeah, I know.
I've talked him into doing a budget special.
Oh, that would be really
on Budget
good.
Day, which isn't which isn't a Business Bunker day. So we're going to do a special show.
A special Simon on radio.
Simon and Mark Telford, the accountant.
Oh, right, brilliant.
Yeah,
we're
going to do a budget show as the budget unfolds.
Wow, yeah. That's
so
excellent.
We're going to caveat everything we say with, we think this is what's happening, but we're not certain.
Until we've read the small print.
Yeah. Take professional advice and wait until we've read the small print and the ink's dried before you go up and do something.
Ed was in at the deep end here on today's show.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to go.
He loves it now.
We got to go. We're in the last 30 seconds. I want to say a huge thank you to Ed Grimes of Hospitality Talent UK, Mr. Simon Webster of Talis IFA, the stunkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin. We will be back with another Business Bunker show next week. We'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.